Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to another episode of How to Be Sound. This is Beatrice McCabe for a change, guess you couldn't tell, and my guest tonight is Rosemary McCabe. Hello, Rosemary.
Hello, Beatrice. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
You're welcome.
I feel very honoured.
You're welcome.
I am reminded of when I first started listening to the Hi-Low, which I have a love-hate relationship with now. Maybe like the title, Hi-Low, it kind of annoys me. Anyway, when I first started listening to the Hi-Low, I had no idea who was speaking at any given time. The only time I could tell them apart was when Pandora was pregnant and Dolly would occasionally talk about drinking, be like, oh, I was out drinking the other night. And then I'd be like, that's Dolly, because Pandora's pregnant, so she's not drinking. But it was only after I read, or after I listened to Dolly's book on audiobook, which I didn't think was that great, but I listened to it and then I tuned into her voice. So I'm wondering if anybody will be able to tell us apart.
For the benefit of the listeners at home, I'd like to point out that Rosemary has a terrible habit of pointing her fingers. Stop pointing at me. While you're talking to me, there's only
not,
you and me here. And
I'm pointing
your hand
at you.
Is up in the air again.
No,
Put your hand down.
I know, because I'm trying to remind myself of what I... But I'm not pointing at you. I'm just pointing at the... It's very hot in here. Considering the rest of the house is like an icebox.
Maybe it's the massive sweater that you have on. Sorry, jumper. Maybe it's a massive jumper that
you
have on.
Oh my God. That brings us nicely on to Beatrice's number one pet peeve since I arrived in America.
It's definitely not my number one. But one of my pet peeves since you've arrived in America... I'd say I just am shocked more than anything else. I wouldn't even call it a pet peeve. I'm just more surprised by your amazing ability to...
How smoothly I have transitioned to the American way of life.
I didn't think that's what you were going to say. How smoothly you have like morphed into
assimilated.
A yank, basically. I mean, it's quite shocking to me, honestly.
I think I would be really, really good in... Like, you know, like World War III or like World War II, when you think, God, how did people just go
along
with that?
World War III, did you just say?
No, I said I would be really good in World War III. Oh, and then I said, for instance, in World War II, when people went, God, how did people go along with that? I would be really good at going along with anything.
Oh,
I would absolutely
I know. I know.
I'd do such a good job of it.
I know.
But I think it's important.
Lemming.
I was about to say, I think it's important to adjust to your surroundings, but I don't. The reason I do it, I think so willingly, is because I have a real paranoia about people hearing my voice and thinking of me as the leprechaun from The Simpsons. So I don't want anyone to have a moment where they go, what is that Irish leprechaun saying? So I want to be like, yeah, I'm just going to put it in the trash. You know?
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
On this episode of How to Be Sound, I'm going to be talking to my older sister, much older, Beatrice McCabe.
Thanks. Hi.
With whom I am currently, would you say lodging?
I would say yes. I would say cohabiting.
Oh, no, that sounds like we're in love.
We are in
love. I mean, we are.
We're in love.
Aww.
Oh, I know, right. With whom you are sister wiving? Definitely not.
Really not.
With whom you are staying?
You know, this is the first episode of How to Be Sound that I've ever recorded while drinking wine.
Well, I mean,
I don't know
therein
what that
lies the difference between you and me. This is the first podcast I've ever recorded, and I'm already drinking wine, and I can intend to continue drinking wine through every podcast I ever record. Hopefully, that would be my ideal podcast. But we have very different views on wine, so that's fine.
And podcasting.
I'm finding this rather uncomfortable for my neck, but that's fine. Liam can edit that part out. Can I move this a tiny bit? There we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can just keep saying that throughout the whole thing. Liam can edit that out. Liam,
no,
take that out.
No, you talk to me normally.
Oh. So the reason I wanted to have my sister on is because she's the only person I know in Fort Wayne.
Correct.
Well, no, well, I mean, I know a handful of people.
You're
going
to have that other person on as well.
Oh, yeah.
Your man
from
Electric Works, we're going to have him on.
Oh, yeah. But I wanted to talk to you about what it was that drove you to abandon us all years and years ago. How long have you been... Do you still consider yourself an expat? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ever use that term because I always feel like I always associate that with being British in a way.
It's okay to be British.
It's fine, but I mean, I'm not. So I always felt that was a very British term. I don't really use it. How long have I not been in Ireland? What age am I? 35? 40. Since I was like 20, one or two, so like 19 years. Yeah, I find that really weird because I think that it's very easy to fall into this. Like when I first moved here, I met many people of like an older generation, very nationalistic, you know, living in New York.
Irish people, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, okay, Irish people. And they would talk to me about like their version of Ireland and be like, talking about, you know, well, it's like this and, you know, and Ireland is like that and Irish people this. And it was all very like emphatic and, but always also very disconnected from my idea of, or my recollection of, you know, Ireland 2 weeks ago. And I think it's very important, or it's difficult at the same time, but like something I try to remember is to remember that I haven't been there recently, that I haven't lived there recently. Like 20 years is actually a really long time. Like for me, it seems really recent, but it's hard to avoid saying things like, oh, Ireland's not like that, or, you know, people don't do that in Ireland. But I have to remember that I don't actually know anymore. You know, I have to, you know, I think you and I had a conversation a couple of years ago where, you know, all jokes aside, you started talking with a very American accent with like that uptick at the end of your sentences. And I thought it was very affected.
If you could see, as you know, the eye roll, there are certain things that, like,
if you could see Rosemary's eye rolling, is what
Yeah. There are certain things that other people could say to me, and I'd be like, ah, yeah, I know, I did that. And then my sister says to me, I'm like, you're such a bitch. I'm so angry right now.
It's true.
That's one of them.
But I thought it was like very much just you being affected by your watching of the OC. But when I went back to Ireland, I realized
everyone was doing it.
Yeah, I realized this was the way Irish people were speaking. Like young Irish people were speaking like this, and it was, you know, part of the influence of America, but also just part of the influence of like being more international, etc.
Yeah, part of the evolution of the language, country. Exactly. And like, not to say that it's necessarily a good or bad thing, I get you.
Well, I mean, it's more, I was just making fun of you, and then I realized, oh no, this is just what this generation is doing. You know?
She's not the only knob. They're all at it.
Exactly. But it's very hard, like, not to, I mean, and in work people go, you know, what's it like? I mean, for example, recently in our cafeteria, we have like International Thursday lunches, right? And they made Irish lunch. And I went in dreading, like, what is this going to be? But anyway,
I would be totally dreading what that was, though. I don't know what quote unquote Irish meal somebody could serve me up that I would relish.
Well, it was more I mean, there's a very good food scene in Ireland now, you know, and nobody expects that or anticipates that. But anyway, in I go to the cafeteria. And literally go over there and there's this like massive big bowl of like disgusting smashed potatoes, you know, the powdered mashed potatoes with like merguez sausages. But not even
merguez sausages.
Actually, wasn't even merguez. It was like the cheapy hot dogs that you get down in the supermarket.
Like Frankfurters. Like,
yes, chopped up in it. And they were like, here's this iron. And I was like, what's that called?
Mr. Superquin would be rolling in his
grave. They were like, it's a traditional Irish meal. And I'm like, this is Germany, maybe, but again, that could be my preconception of another.
What was with the sausages? Oh, the mashed potato. I mean,
it was like it was hard. It was like
sausage and mashed potato.
It was gross.
Hide the sausage. I hope you said that in work. That's
I didn't.
Like
I just
really
I was like I felt like honestly personally offended. And then, you know, to be honest, I was like, maybe this is what Irish people are eating. No, I didn't think that. But I was horrified.
That's toad in the hole, isn't it? And that would be British. Like toad in the hole, the mashed potato and sausage.
Yeah, but also it's like actual. I didn't even put that together because it honestly was horrifying. I didn't even think about toad in the hole.
What did you eat? Did you eat any of it? Like,
no, I didn't.
And the Irish, what?
It was horrific. It was like horrific, genuinely horrifying. Like I took it back to my desk. I looked at it. I was like, I actually can't do this. And I threw it in the bin, which may be wasteful, but I was honestly horrified. But then also, there were so many jokes about this Irish meal. I really objected to it afterwards.
Did other people in the office eat it?
Yeah, they all ate it. And they were like, what do you think of that international lunch? Like, it was really bad.
I'm kind of flattered that like the words international and Irish would be put together, though.
It is international.
I know, but like international to me seems more glamorous. Franche. Or maybe Italiano. Speaking of which, I don't know why I did that, like, Italiano. I mean, obviously, I'm bored listening to you. I know everything that you've been doing. But what was it that made you leave Ireland? We should have probably said that at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
A terrible breakup? No, it wasn't.
No, it was more like, I mean, so it was 19 years ago. It was more UI. There were a couple of small companies in
Well,
Dublin.
Hang on. You studied fashion design and history of art
in NCAD. Yeah.
And did you know when you finished, because you're a fashion designer now, but did you know when you finished that you wanted to do fashion design, or were you kind of going, I want to do something in fashion or something in, you know, the wider sphere, or were you kind of specific about it?
Well, I was specifically thinking I was going to be a fashion designer, as in apparel designer, because that was what I studied. But I had actually, I mean,
we call that clothing in Ireland.
Clothing, correct. But apart from things like styling or magazines, I didn't actually know that there was an entire ecosystem around fashion. Like, we didn't study anything about the business of fashion, things like, I think, that are much more known now. Although, you know, I still don't know, like, if I was me in college now, would I have a broader knowledge? I think that with the rise, with the advent of all of this information, you know, that it's so much more accessible now, like business of fashion.
Yeah. I was going to say
even
that.
Style.com, Vogue.com, yeah. Any of those things, like, there's, or Man Repeller, Refinery29. There's so many different avenues of access.
Even you can see, like, when London Fashion Week is on, there are behind the scenes videos put up on YouTube where you can see, oh, there's a whole swathe of people that we never hear about who are working on these projects.
Like Instagram, all of these things, you have a window into people's lives or careers that you could never have before. And I think that, but like, certainly I had no idea, and I always felt like it would be good to, you know, give a course or write a book or something about all the different avenues that are open to people. Because now, you know, people study fashion merchandising. I still don't know that that's so widely known, but like this merchandising, planning, you know, the whole side of marketing as it pertains to fashion, all of those things I didn't really, I wasn't aware of. I thought fashion design was like the be all and end all. And I thought I would be an apparel designer, and actually never really, I mean, the only job I ever had in apparel design was when I first moved to Milan after college. I got a job initially at Fiorucci, which is an Italian fashion house. And
I think most of us probably remember the jumpers with the two angels and the Fiorucci logo.
Yeah, and the cherries.
You can still buy them,
and
I think, on ASOS.
Yeah. And it's a license now. But anyway, I got a job, and it was like way out in the boondocks, like outside of Milan. I had to get up at 5 a.m. to get a lift from this guy who would drive by in the, you know, in the dead of, like, the dark of the Milanese night and pick me up in his car and drive me out there. And I was working there for about 6 weeks, and I never got a paycheck. And then I arrived to work one day, and all of the women in the sewing room were out on the street picketing. Like, basically, they hadn't been paid for 6 months, and they were like, you know, pay us. And they, you're going. And I, of course, didn't understand Italian, so I had to, like, write down what it said on the picket boards, on the placards,
and
take
it
back, and take it back home to my friends and say, like, what does this say? And they're like, it says you're going bankrupt, you know, pay us. So that was kind of an interesting introduction, but that was really my only job in apparel. And then I got a job in Marni through friends of my cousins. And I got a job, and I was doing like technical illustrations. So I would draw the apparel that the designers designed. And I moved into assisting the creative director there, who was really focused on the accessories and the print design. And I kind of ended up in accessories, and that's where I've been ever since, you know.
That's a very Irish story of, like, my cousin knew somebody.
I think that's actually life.
Which is incredible.
Like, honestly,
yeah, true.
But I mean, I think that's certainly life in fashion. Like, so much of it is who you know. And, like, just it's more like that first foot in the door is really, really hard to get. And once you get it. And it was actually weird, because it wasn't my cousin's friend. It wasn't like my cousin's friend's girlfriend at the time worked in Marni in the atelier in the sewing room. And she said, hey, there's this job going. And I turned up and I went for an interview with the head designer at the time. And he was, I'd say, a unique individual. And he brings me for lunch. And I was so broke. Like, you've no idea. I was so broke. And he brings me for lunch. And he brought me with two other designers. And he had, like, I don't know, two bottles of wine and, like, a main course and a dessert and all this kind of
and
stuff.
Did they divide the bill by four?
No, I thought this was super fancy. He left me with the bill. Yeah, I was... It was. I mean, I honestly nearly had a heart attack. I had to go out to the bank. It was like so Irish to go to the bank, like text mom to wire me money, all this kind of stuff. Turned out okay, but I mean, it was a very strange first move. I mean,
you know what? That's one of the things that I always tell people. Like, when I used to meet young journalists who'd be going, "Oh, can I meet you for a coffee to pick your brains about something?" I would always pay, and I would always tell them, "If you meet somebody who's paid more than you are, let them pay."
I mean, not on dates or friends, but in a business.
Oh, no, I know. That's bizarre.
No, this was actually just weird.
But like somebody needed to tell him that.
He knew it. He totally knew. It was totally weird.
Well, like, imagine how much worse it would have been if you hadn't got the job. At least you got the job. He's like,
I got the job.
Milked her for those two bottles of wine, but sure, I gave her the job.
It's just
in
so
the
bizarre.
End.
I mean, you know, it was probably the first taste of just how bizarre the fashion industry can be.
And why did you decide to go to Milan over anywhere else?
Well, I did Erasmus in Milan. I just always wanted to go to Italy. I had like very romantic notions of what it was all going to be like. I wanted to learn Italian. I loved just the art history. I think it was maybe the art history aspect of it that I was like fascinated by, you know, this rich culture. And so after college, I went over. I didn't have a job or anything like that. I went over and I knocked on. I remember walking up and down all the streets of Milan with my portfolio and my bag and knocking on
just
all
like
the buzzers.
Just like an America's Next Top Model.
Yeah, exactly. And like, but they wouldn't even open the door. They would just say, see? And I would have nothing to say to that. I'd be like, hello. So.
I remember the first time I came over to meet you. I think maybe the first time I came over on my own when you were in Milan and I was in college studying Italian. And so I had kind of very basics. But I came over to meet you and I think you took a half day or something and you went in at lunchtime and you left me in a cafe and were like, you know, why don't you get a sandwich here and you can have a sandwich and a coffee and then go back up to the apartment or something. And I remember going up to order and I was like prepared. I was like, I know what I want. I know how to say it in Italian. I know how to say please and thank you. And they said something like, prendere a strada? And I went, sì. Like, had no clue what they were saying. They were basically saying, do you want it to take away? And then they handed me a takeaway thing and basically shoved me out the door. And I was so disappointed. I really wanted to sit down and have my sandwich, but I didn't know how to say no. I'm going to
suck in.
I'm sure I could have, but I was so scarlet that I was like, oh, I'm definitely taking it for the road. Goodbye.
God, why do we do these really stupid things? Like, oh, yeah, thanks.
What, like, yeah, I mean, what, like, why are we so embarrassed of what the person in the cafe is
I'm sure they wouldn't actually be shocked. Oh, I'm actually foreign. I didn't understand you. I'm just sitting back down.
Oh, my God. Speaking of which, today I got honked at twice.
Well, in a good way.
No, I was in the car. I was trying to find parking downtown, so I was driving quite slowly and I kept thinking I saw a space and indicating and then going, oh, that's not a space.
I would just like to clarify that Fort Wayne is hardly, you know, chock-a-block with the traffic. I thought I saw a space.
Oh, no, you know what it was? I did see a space.
I saw many spaces.
I saw many spaces, yes. But they all said 1 hour max. So I was like, oh, I don't want to park there. I want to park somewhere else. And I got beeped at. And I realised both times I got beeped at, I went, I'm farting, like in a weird, but like obviously they couldn't hear me. I was just saying it to myself in the car. It's like, leave me alone, I'm farting. What is wrong with me?
You actually said that?
To myself, like, but yes, out loud. And then I was like, who am I saying, who am I defending myself to? I think I was preparing for like a policeman to come over and go, ma'am, do you have a driver's license? I'd be like, I'm farting, sorry.
What about the time I was driving to work one morning and I was parked behind, I stopped at a stop sign. Yeah, here. I was only here about 6 months. I was driving to work and I stopped at a stop sign and there was a big truck, like a big lorry parked in front of me. And I stopped. He was stopped, obviously. And he started to back up very slowly, like just totally apropos of nothing. And I, of course, couldn't, you know, engage foot, brain and panic center all at the same time. So
understandable.
I kind of kicked my feet around in like the well of the car, but nothing actually happened. Anyway, he crashed into me, of course. So next thing you know, the police are called, right? Because they have to come and your man's like, he was super nice and apologetic, but he's like, oh, we'll call the police and they can take all our details and blah, blah. So your man comes along and he's like, step out of the car, ma'am. You know, so I step out of the car. What is this piece of paper? I'm like, it's an interesting. And I was only here for a couple of months, so I didn't. Anyway, so I give him my license. What is this piece of paper, ma'am? And I'm like, it's an international driver's license.
He has a point.
Well, excuse me. It is an international, it's an Irish driver's license. It's a pink piece of paper, fold out three pieces, right? It's beautiful. Anyway, and lots of it is in Irish. So, you know, sorry if you don't recognize it, but you're...
I have a card now, you know.
Okay, good.
Go on.
Anyway, what is this piece of paper, ma'am? And I go, oh, it's an Irish driver's license. Mm-hmm. Where did this come from? I'm like, Ireland. Who issued this exactly, ma'am? I'm like, the Irish government. I'm like, I don't know, do you know the Irish Motor Vehicle
Department
Bureau?
Of Transport,
like,
maybe?
Yeah. I'm like, I don't, somebody in Ireland. Ma'am, is this real? We have a lot of forgeries here. We have a lot of Mexicans coming up here who like to have fake driver's license that they pay for on the internet. How do I know this isn't fake? And I'm like, I was just like, what? I mean,
sorry.
Like, it's wrong on so many levels, like, but like, you don't, and like...
Surely it's...
I also got crashed into here.
Yeah, you know, but also, I mean, totally aside from that, because I'm kind of shocked that he was like, get out of your car when you were the one who got crashed into. He could have been nicer about that.
I mean, he was kind of nice and he was sort of handsome too, which made the whole thing. But I mean, nonetheless, like, it doesn't matter how handsome you are.
Of
like, you're obviously a knob, sorry.
Of course. But like, if he is a policeman who responds to traffic violations, surely it is his job to know...
I'm just opening the wine.
I know you are. It's very loud. Surely it's his job to know what the international
pouring
driver's license
like
look like.
It's like a sensual...
It's like ASMR.
If you could just stop talking for a second. Ooh.
We've never had such a ruckus.
All I should say is wasn't planning to pour quite so much, but it sounded so good.
You're gonna regret that when you hear without... what you sound like. How long were you in Milan for then?
3.5 years.
And then where'd you go?
And then, Rosemary, I upped sticks and I moved to Gay Paris. And I had a fantastic time there working at John Galliano for another 3 years.
I would like to point out that in the meantime, so I had gone to college to do an arts degree, basically because I wanted to be a journalist. But Marion Finucane, my good family friend, name drop, had said to me not to do journalism directly. She was like, do something else, you have something to write about, right? So I did, when I was choosing my subjects, they were like, what subjects do you want to do? So in first year, I did English, psychology, sociology and politics, mm-hmm. which I hated.
And then I was like, where are we going with this?
And then I was like, I'll do a language. My sister's in Italy.
Yes,
wouldn't it be handy to learn Italian?
I was actually about to say, I'd like to rewind to a couple of these stories about Rosemary that I would like to share with everybody.
Hang on. Number one. What I'm saying is how annoying it is when you decide to learn a language for your sister living in that country and then fucking moves.
Well, I'd like to talk about the summer that Rosemary came to stay with us in Milan. How long were you there for?
10 weeks. It was not even that long.
It was a fantastic 10 weeks. We had a gorgeous apartment, myself and my friend Julie, on the top floor of a beautiful building down on the outskirts of Zanavilio, which is like the canals in Milan. And we had a beautiful, we rented it for the terrazzo. It was
beautiful.
So gorgeous. We used to go out there with our Turkish pillows and our plants and play the Turkish CD that I got on holidays when we were about 18. And we would listen to it. And
was that by Sir Tab Erin?
Yes. And we would do some, you know.
She won the Eurovision.
Very pathetic. Oh no, it was a guy. Some very pathetic.
Oh, his name was Tarkan.
Tarkan, that was it. We do some very, I would say, unimpressive loose, belly dancing.
I was just about to say loose interpretation of belly dancing.
Loose belly dancing. That's too personal. Anyway,
also accurate.
I remember at one point Julie had a boyfriend who I went in to like fix a drink one evening. I came out and he was a yoga guy and he was like, I thought they would be kissing on the balcony. I come back out and there they are, like, there he is upside down with his legs wrapped around his own head, showing her like his flexibility. I was going, this is very tame.
Sounds like he was showing her more than his flexibility.
No, he really wasn't. It was very tame. Anyway, one week,
I don't think I could ever go out with a yogi.
One week, Julie and I went down to, I can't remember where we went. Did we go to Sicily?
Sicily.
We went to Sicily and we entrusted Rosemary with our beautiful terrazzo with all the plants. Come back 2 weeks later, whatever, 10 days later, to discover Rosemary fast asleep in the bed, snoozed, very relaxed. We pulled up the curtains to the terrazzo. Like, obviously, she's, you know, it's just been a bit hot. No, it turns out Rosemary hasn't actually opened these curtains for the 10 days we were away. And the entire terrazzo was bone dry, dead, pathetic.
I would like to point out some important
never
factors.
Never trust Rosemary with your plants is all I
have
to say.
Don't trust Rosemary with your animate objects. I would like to point out several things. Number one, there was a heat wave.
Whatever.
Number two, I did water them on the very first day, after which I totally forgot. And I've apologized thousands and thousands of times. But also, like, the next week you're moving to Paris and we're going to bring the plants. But that's not the point.
That is... It was absolutely beside the point. And I feel like you're exaggerating. It wasn't the next week. In a nod to my so-called murder, the other podcast that Rosemary
my favourite murder, that so-called murder. So-called Jesus Christ, Mom.
Angela Chase gets killed.
Jesus Christ. What were you nodding
Can
to
you
my favourite murder
there
for?
There was literally only one season
I
of
know,
that.
I can't. I can't believe it. I can.
Anyway, one of my favourite things was, so Rosemary worked in this bar.
Oh my God, I
remember you worked in this
Milan.
Bar. No, we weren't.
Yes.
Remember you worked in this bar that like I used to frequent on a regular basis.
Yes.
Would avoid, so like the bars closed at 3 or 4 a.m. So we lived like in the most darkened road ever with like no public transport or anything. And Rosemary would come home.
I swear I have to hear about this once a month.
Come home and be like, oh, I got home. It's cool. It's fine. I'd be like, Rosemary, I was trying to text you. I was trying to call you. Like, oh, I couldn't answer you. I had my headphones on really loud. So I was safe. I'm like, oh my God, it's actually a miracle she survived.
What she's trying to say is I used to walk home for 30 minutes.
It's like a joke.
I actually wrote about this week on my Patreon page, patreon.com/RosemaryMcCabe, where I've added extra benefits for my $1 subscribers. But I did point out, basically, and I don't think I've ever said this to you like this before, but in my head, I was imagining myself like Piper Perabo in Coyote Ugly.
Oh no, and I'm pretty sure I knew that.
It's like, I can't just get a taxi home. I need to wind down.
You used to always play that song on my like tiny keyboard. Do you remember?
Just stop joking. No, I do not remember that.
You know the one she plays with one finger on the roof.
Oh God. Anyway, listen, I survived. I wouldn't recommend it. Although, actually, I lost a lot of weight in those 10 weeks. I'm convinced it was from that incredibly sweaty 30-minute walk home.
You actually drove us insane.
No, because I was always scoffing bread and olive oil, and I still lost loads of weight.
We never could understand. We're like, Rosemary has like eaten, but you weren't drinking. Again, that could be me and the wine.
I think
like
I was drinking a bit. No. I definitely was drinking a bit because I remember several nights when I wasn't working, going to Cape Town, the bar that I was working in, being accused of being an alcoholic.
Well, should I? No, you weren't.
By the bar people, I mean. Please. They'd be like, are you going home now?
Should I qualify that with, you weren't drinking as much as we were drinking?
Grand.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Correct.
But I was eating a lot of bread and olive oil.
You were. Lots is delicious.
But listen, as Mary from Weight Watchers would say, you never regret a walk.
As Mrs. Weight Watchers in France would say, you're not hungry, you're just thirsty. It's like, no, I'm actually starving. She'd be like, no, just drink water.
As our school nun, my school nun and yours used to say, you, my dear, will never be starving. Which now that I say it out loud, I'm wondering if that was a bit of an insult.
I think it was. She never said that to me.
Suddenly, like, was she like looking just me saying. Up and down going, you, my dear, will never be starving. Like that man in Spain who told me I had reserves.
I mean,
you have reserves. Wasn't wrong.
I'm not going to interrupt this like moment of self-epiphany.
This come to God moment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then you went to Paris. Did you love it?
I did. I loved it. I loved Paris. I loved Milan too. I mean, I really loved Paris. So we had like really great team members, like lots of young people. It was really fun. I loved it.
You had a really good social life in Paris, didn't
I
you?
I did. And I loved the French.
Alcohol?
I found France maybe more modern than Milan. You know, I was always surprised a little bit. Like, Milan is cool and it's very modern and it's very, like, everything is current and relevant. But it's not as maybe contemporary. Like, there's not as much of a scene for young people. I don't know. Paris is like, more of a true urban, like, centre. You know, Milan is more of an Italian city. It's more specific to Italy. Does that make sense? Like, Paris is more of a melting pot for lots of different people from all over the world.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was going to say, like, really wankily. Well, yeah, I mean, having been to both of those cities, I can see what you mean. Maybe people who don't know what you mean, they haven't been to it, but, like, I know what you mean. But also, like, Milan, I'm about to say something that may be stupid. Milan isn't the capital of Italy, sure? It's not. That's Rome.
That's Rome.
Yeah, so, like, Milan isn't even the capital, and Paris is the capital, and is, like, bigger than Milan and
yeah, but also I feel like Italy in general is just more specific. Like, it's more specifically Italian. It's not as modern in terms of attitudes. You know, it's not as progressive as France. I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure Italian people are like, we're highly progressive, and like, and I'm not trying to speak. You know, that was just my experience at the time, but it was maybe more closed off. There were a lot of issues with immigrants, and you know, there was a lot more xenophobia. Not to say that that didn't exist in Paris, but it's a more integrated city because they've had a lot more time to deal with, you know, people. Like, they have a big Guadeloupean culture, you know, because they have all of these
in Paris.
Yeah, like they have all of these countries that are, you know, French. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot more, like, quote unquote immigrants there who've already integrated first, second, third generation. So they've had to deal with a lot of these things already, and it's more
I mean Paris is current. More cosmopolitan. Yeah. Than
like, I think
Milan
more of like
be.
Paris in terms of like Paris, New York, you know.
Yeah, Paris, New York, London.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Would be in similar categories, yeah. And so why did you leave Paris? I mean, like, it's interesting to me because I kind of know the answer to these questions and then I kind of don't.
I mean, I kind of don't either. When you're asking me, I'm like, why did I leave Paris? I mean, I enjoyed working at Galliano very much. Like, I loved it. But I also think there was part of me that wanted to, like, I was working really hard. But also, like, as a designer, there's a part of you that really wants to see your product being used and enjoyed by people. And working at Galliano was more like working in the theatre or in the opera. Like, it was fantastic. And the fashion shows were, like, spectacular. So much effort, so much money put into them. They were really, truly theatrical, operatic. You know, they were very staged. There was a lot of kind of choreography that went into them, and they were really a big deal, and they were very influential in terms of the fashion world. But at the end of the day, you worked on product that maybe had a run of, you know, 60 pieces if you were very, very fortunate. And his main clientele were like in Kuwait or Abu Dhabi,
or Russia,
you know.
Yeah, or,
yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really
I remember you telling me that Galliano the label wasn't necessarily made to sell Galliano clothes. Do you know what I mean? That yeah. like the business model wasn't we are going to sell X number of units. It was kind yeah. of like this is the creative output. The money is kind of coming from Dior because John Galliano was designing for Dior yeah. at the time. And then I remember you telling me, and I mean, I think I've probably read about this since then, but you were the first person who ever told me that, say, big fashion houses don't necessarily make their money from the clothes that they show on the catwalk. They make their money from the hundreds of thousands of lipsticks they're selling or yeah. the hundreds of thousands of wallets. Do you know what I mean? That they're making their money on the smaller accessible things that are sold in huge numbers in China, in America, and that these huge gowns that you see going down the catwalk, they're not the things that are making the money.
100%. I mean, if you think about something like Fendi, all of their money is made from their accessories, but that's not, I mean, and I think that's a very strong external business for them. Like, we all would recognize a Fendi handbag or, you know,
I really want one of their handbag straps.
Yeah.
For my non-Fendi
all their straps,
handbag.
Et
yeah, but, I really like them.
But their clothing is like so much more expensive to produce. They have such a much smaller run of it. It's so, you know, but it takes just as much work. Like, just because it's a smaller production run doesn't mean it takes a smaller group of people. It takes a lot of fabric development, design development, production, sewers, but it's not where the money is made. Like, you make your money off your accessories.
But
you
it's know? Also kind of one couldn't exist without the other. Isn't that correct? That like what's shown on the catwalk and the kind of the covetable nature of the clothing and the, I suppose, the kind of niche audience or like the niche buyer, that's what makes the really high demand for the smaller accessories and the lipstick and the wallets, that like people see what's going down the catwalk and they see that maybe Cara Delevingne owns one piece of it and they think, I want to get a piece of that pie, but I can't mm-hmm. afford that, so I'm going to buy something down here.
I mean, it's extremely aspirational, I think, is what you're saying. You know, there's that we were...
Well, I mean, I suppose... Look, sorry, but what I'm trying to say is that you couldn't get rid of the catwalk and well, just do the accessories
yeah,
and lipsticks.
I'm going to give you a different example that I think is probably even more understandable to people, you know, or to all of us. Like, it's more relevant now. If you think of a brand like Coach, which really had kind of cheapened itself by just becoming all off-price, which is, you know, TJ Maxx, Factory.
Kildare Village,
exactly. Yeah. All outlet. Like, that was really where all of their business was done. Over the past couple of years, they've been trying to clean that up and to become a full-price brand again. And as part of that, like, it's really hard to be a brand when you only sell bags, because you don't know, like, we can all project an image onto that handbag. You know, we could all think, like, well, the clothing that goes with that or who, the person who wears that, because they're not selling you an image really of the full look, the full mm-hmm, lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I think that lifestyle component is really important and very aspirational. Like, if you look at when Coach started their turnaround, it must be like 3 or 4 years ago now, one of their first things was to engage a new creative director, but mainly to launch apparel. And because that apparel allows you to project an aesthetic that is, to your point, aspirational. It's something that is clear in your mind. You know, this is the look. So the catwalk creates that fantasy for people.
Oh, that,
by buying that, like a handbag, you're buying a piece of that dream.
Yeah.
That, you know,
that you're kind of going, I can be the Dior mm-hmm. woman with this one thing.
Exactly.
I can be
yeah.
the Coach woman with this
But you
this
know
bag.
What yeah. that Dior woman looks like through
you.
The apparel. Without
yeah,
apparel,
yeah, yeah.
it's very hard. Like, I work for Vera Bradley now in the States, and we are accessories, travel, home, lots of different product categories. But without apparel, it's actually very difficult to craft that lifestyle. Like, we are a lifestyle, but until we can give you that full head-to-toe look, it's hard for people. Well, maybe it's not hard for people. It's hard, I think it's easy for people to create an image of the brand however they imagine it to be. It's hard for us to have one compelling kind of North Star without that apparel to dress her head to toe, because every time you go to shoot a handbag or you go to show a picture of a handbag, you can't put on a naked body. Like, you either can have it on, you can have it as a still photography, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not as emotional. But if you want to put it on a person, you then are forced to go out and buy somebody else's clothing. So
yeah.
you tend to try and buy something that is, you tend to try and style it around something that is maybe more nondescript, more,
yeah.
and then
well,
you
I mean,
end up dumbing it down and making it boring.
Yeah,
know?
I mean, like, you can't show a handbag at something when they're like, that's that Fendi jacket.
Exactly. I mean, actually,
you don't want another brand recognizable on your phone.
No, it's funny, because one of the campaigns that we did have a lot of very patterned, because we're a very patterned brand, did have a lot of very patterned clothing. And we found that our customer service was like inundated with phone calls. Where do those trousers come from?
Yeah.
So it's not that people don't want, like, half the time they thought it was us, you know. But that's kind of the danger. Like, what are you messaging? What are you signaling?
Yeah.
Like, your clothes signal a lot of different things. So that's really what I think the whole advantage of having a lifestyle brand is. To your point, you're messaging, you're sending a signal of cachet, or on the flip side, of casual living,
mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
you
accessible,
know, Zara,
everyday.
Trend. Yeah.
Like a girl next door.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, on that customer service thing, when I worked in Stellar, we used to get so many calls to the switch. I mean, so many calls to the switchboard about so many random things, right? But one of the things that we would get is if ever we put a photograph of a woman, say even like somebody from a Hugo Boss advert, or like not even Hugo Boss, that's a bad example. But if we put a photograph, sorry, actually this is a good one. This is a really good example I'm about to use now. But if we did like a woman from a Rimmel advert, mm-hmm. and say we cut her out and put her on an editorial page about beauty, we'd get calls going, where's her jumper from? Right? And yeah. You'd be like, that's the Rimmel model, we don't know. And then the other thing was when we did fashion shoots, I remember at one stage having a discussion with Kirsty, who was then.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
An editor of Stellar Magazine, who you can hear on a previous episode of How to Be Sound, and she was saying
rolling
to me...
Rolling my eyes right now.
She's rolling my eyes. Rolling
she's
her eyes
rolling
at my
eyes.
She's rolling
no,
my eyes. That's,
I'm rolling
that's
my
correct.
Eyes.
She's rolling her own eyes at my radio voice. Oh. Kirsty saying to me one day, I said something like, we don't need to include those shoes, you can barely see them. And literally you could see a tiny little triangle of leather in the corner of the page. And she was going, no, if we don't put that in, somebody will call. And they would call. They would call and go, I see like a glimmer of a bracelet in the far left corner of that photograph. Where's that from? You'd be like, that's a blur in the background. Like that could be a bit of snot. You know, it could be anything. But, like, I need to know where that's from.
Snot.
Not in Stellar, but you know what I mean.
I actually think it's amazing because, I mean, I can't tell you how many hours I've spent wasted. Like, you know, there are those websites that tell you, who wore what in what TV show. It has never once occurred to me to like write into the TV show or the magazine. Like, I immediately Google obsessively for hours, you know, black chiffon necktie shirt, buttons, flattering.
If you were on Episode Twitter, you two. Could just tweet them every day and annoy them, and eventually they would tell you.
Oh.
Be like, make her go away.
But like, usually it's like in something ancient that everybody else has watched years ago that I only just started
SVU,
watching.
SVU 1999.
Excuse me, I like that.
My main learning from working at Stellar was always write into magazines. If you have the time and the inclination and you want to win the prize, write in. Nobody writes into magazines anymore. Like, nobody emails them. We got so few readers' emails that it was always very slim pickings trying to pick, like, who'd get letter of the month. So if you have the time, write in, because you could win the package of, like, Venus razors or whatever it was. So from Paris, you went to...
New York.
You sound really bored in my line of question. You're like, I just want to have a chat. Stop asking me about my job.
Oh, I'm just like, okay.
Let me tell you all now. You moved to New York and you worked for Diane von Furstenberg, which was one of the highlights of my life because I had some great, great dresses from DVF. And not only did I have some, I don't know why I'm sounding really country now.
It's good.
Not only did I have some great dresses, but I got to go to a party in the DVF store in New York where, and I tell everybody.
Yes.
I was once at a party with Gisele Bündchen.
Where I was about to say you were once shocked by a toothpick with hair. And you said, oh my God, is that Gisele Bündchen? And we were all shocked by how skinny she was. I do remember that.
Shocked. It wasn't even, yes.
It was how skinny she was. We were all shocked.
Yes, yes, yes.
How but what sinewy.
I thought the last glass of wine was too big.
I thought people might like another little
tinkle. Ridiculous. I tell everybody, like, whenever, you know, occasionally in the office it'll come up like, who's the most famous person you've ever seen, or blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I was at a party with Gisele Bündchen once, and then people are annoying and they go, what was she like? And I'm like, she was 3 miles away from me.
No, you don't say that. You go, she was super smiley.
No, I always say was not super smiley.
She was super smiley. Do you remember she flicking her hair in every direction?
I don't remember her flicking her hair. Now I'm having a vision of her like Connie Britton from Nashville, or Friday Night Lights. Exactly. Connie Britton, who I love.
I love Connie Britton too.
But the thing that I noticed yes, so she was super skinny, but not just that she was super skinny, but that her super skinniness had aged her incredibly. She looked like a skeleton with skin.
But she was super like, sinewy.
Sinewy, but like she looked about 65.
I think you're being mean now. You're just, you know...
I'm not being mean. I'm just defending my choice. Face. I'm just defending my choice to eat a pint of ice cream a night in America. And that's why I'm doing it, to stay young. So, you moved to New York. You worked for DVF. What were the main differences that you noticed between working for a fashion brand in New York and working for a fashion brand in a kind of Europe? I mean, I know Europe isn't like a monolith, but...
Well, I can only speak to the experience that I've obviously had. Like, I don't want to overgeneralize. No, I mean, seriously, because like, I think...
Of course it's your experience.
No, of course. Thanks, Rosemary. But I mean, I think like America is so business focused. You know, I never... But also, I worked for very high-end fashion brands in Europe. So it's very possible that if you worked for like, you know, Zara or whatever, that it would be business. But I have to imagine that Zara is about insights business. You know?
Oh, yeah. I'd say Zara is a lot of Excel.
Yeah. But I more think, well, I mean, Zara is such a short term turnaround.
Zara is such an interesting one, though, because I remember when I worked there, I worked in Zara. Jesus. Bashing the mic with their wine glass now and everything. When I worked for Zara in Dublin, I worked in Zara when it opened in Dublin. And I served Nikki and Georgina on my very first day.
I can't believe we're talking about you all the time. I thought this was about me.
No, this podcast has to be a chat. People like to hear from me as well, I think. I hope. Liam, take that out.
Stop saying that.
Georgina and Nikki, I served them on the very first day. And I told them that my mom had bought the VIP magazine just for their wedding. And then later, not that same day, but like later in my life, Nikki blocked me on Twitter. I don't know why. Don't know what I did to him. You know, I've been blocked by about six different Dublin DJs, all men.
I don't find that
hate a DJ.
Unusual, honestly, or shocking.
But no, what I was going to say was
Why are they all DJs? You've only been blocked by DJs.
Oh, no, I've been blocked by loads of people, I've been blocked by a lot of DJs. They all have one thing in common. They hate Rosemary McCabe.
Or do you talk about your musical choices? Are they like,
no.
I can't?
You know who has blocked me? Joe Duffy.
But didn't you have
talk
a fight
to
with
Joe?
Him?
No, Joe Duffy's fucking 75 million years old. He's the guy who people call in. They go, Joe, my neighbour's been drilling for 6 weeks, and Joe fixes their problems for them. Drilling out the electricals. What the fuck is wrong with you? Anyway, what I was going to say was, Jesus, this is the kind of chat you really wanted to be having.
I'm so happy right now. I can't believe you're blocked by Joe Duffy. I thought you were blocked by that other guy. The one like who?
Niall Boylan.
No.
I'm blocked by him as well. Okay, Niall Boylan, Joe Duffy.
No, the other guy. The guy you went in, you had the interview with him.
Oh, George Hook.
Oh, him.
I don't think he's blocked me, but he should have.
Oh.
So Niall Boylan, Joe Duffy, PJ Gallagher, Nikki Byrne.
I just feel
there's
so
more
bad.
Than
is Nikki Byrne like boys?
You're saying Westlife.
I can't believe you've been blocked by him.
That's kind of a good lame to fame.
I've been telling everybody here that like you've got a really high profile in Ireland. You're an influencer. It's like she's managed to piss off every
I've
single
got such a high
male
profile.
Of note. Exactly.
Yeah, I've got such a high profile that I've pissed off this boy band member. They're so sensitive.
Snowflakes. They're so threatened is all
so
I have to say.
Threatened by a powerful woman. Mm-hmm. To be fair now to Nikki, I think it was when I was tweeting about like, this is bullshit. He shouldn't have got that job. He hasn't got a clue. So I think it's probably justified.
He's probably like,
who's this
I can't
bitch?
Cope with this anymore.
Anyway, what I was trying to say about Zara was, it's really interesting that they can basically look at their figures, see this dress sold 500 units this week, and they can produce it within 2 weeks.
Yeah,
they
but the one that
produce
that's,
huge numbers
but that's,
of it then, 2 weeks
But that's
later.
Because they take a big position on their fabrics. So like most companies, when they design something, they think, I'm going to design this. They design the bag or whatever, the dress, they then say, what fabric should I make this out of? This silk. What colour would I like it in? This pink colour. Whereas what Zara does is at the beginning of every season or like on a, you know, on their calendar, whatever time it is. I don't work there, so I don't know. But like, I do know they do this. They say, these are our colours of the season. These are our four core fabrics. Let's dye them all up in all the fabrics. So the fabric is sitting there ready to go. And they have these small batch production runs like that are ready. So, and they just get their designs, their patterns, and they just make them with the fabric that's ready to go.
How dare you mansplain Zara to me?
Oh,
I mean, that's interesting, and I'm annoyed that I didn't know that already.
Oh,
that I did actually work there.
That's not mansplaining then, if you didn't know.
No, it's not mansplaining because you're a woman.
It's not mansplaining because you didn't know. Have you seen the chart?
No,
it says, does she know?
No. Men explaining anything is mansplaining. That's the hill I'm willing to die on.
That's not true at all. You have to look at the chart. Have you seen the chart?
I've seen the chart.
The chart is
I've
amazing.
Mansplaining to me.
Every single time I watch it, I laugh. Every single time I read that chart. Oh, I was recently in a couple of meetings. I have to say, I just think this is a strange expression. I may have shared it with you. But
swirl?
No, I know you like that one. But this woman consultant who was working with us kept saying, so she would kind of bring us together every week or every 2 weeks to kind of go through whatever the work we were doing was, you know, and she'd go, okay, so like, let's look at page one and, you know, here we're going to look at this. And now here's an interesting topic. Let's just like, let's stare kind of hard at this for a few minutes. Let's
I remember
stare
you telling
at
me
this on the screen.
I'm That's like, actually amazing.
I just find that really odd, right?
I'm going to start doing that to people. Actually, that would be an amazing time, like an amazing way to fill time. Because I have frequently given talks where I'm like, how the fuck am I going to fill this 40 minutes?
That's not reassuring.
So from now on, I'm going to start doing a block where I'm like, could we all just stare at this for 3.5 minutes?
But it was more like, let's stare really hard at this. Like, let's take some time to really stare at this. I'm like, stare just doesn't seem like the right word.
Was it by any chance one of those seeing eye pictures where you stare at it long enough and the shark goes 3D?
I wish it had been. That would have been amazing.
That would have been great.
But that wasn't it. Anyway, I can't. Revolve. That's the company that I'm trying to think of. Revolve. So they are like now $1 billion, I think, evaluation. And they are the best, you know, West Coast. They are the best at this. Their entire company, they have no designers. Their entire business is based on what is the customer buying? What does the customer want? What is the customer telling us? And they literally go out there. The customer is buying yellow, produce yellow. The customer is buying pink, make pink clothing. The customer is buying this dress in this color. And they like pair their, it's all algorithms and it's all about.
So hang on, if
they've
no
to the
designers,
insights, their consumers.
Who they designs
just,
the clothes?
They just go straight out to their factories and they're like, our customer's telling us they want pink, they want yellow, they want wrap dress, they want, and it's super responsive. And it's like, they're now $1 billion valuation, like, which is phenomenal. And it's all about insights. It's all about marketing and insights. That's me scratching my
leg. I know, it's very loud. I'm waiting for you to stop. This podcast is never going to be over if you keep on with the sound effects. I have a mosquito bite in the base of my foot, you hear me? And on the sole of my foot even, you hear me giving out about it?
Yes, all day long.
I haven't mentioned it to
yes,
you yet.
You have.
I haven't even shown you this mosquito bite yet.
Oh my God.
Absolute bitch, trying to make me look bad.
Anyway.
To make me
sound so then, while I was in New York, then I finished up at DVF, worked there for a couple of years, worked on her accessories, launched accessories.
We had some wonderful times in New York, didn't
we? It was
we?
Great. It was really great. I mean, she's an amazing...
I didn't even mean that. I just meant like,
well, she's also an amazing
great
restaurant woman, and
you had
amazing,
a really nice house.
I had a lovely house, and it was
a bit
amazing.
Hot.
I think I never really. It's very hot in here now. I never. It could be the wine. I never realized until now, like until my last couple of jobs, how phenomenal it was to work with all these women. You know, like I just took it for granted. All these powerful women in all the most senior positions. Obviously, DVF was the most senior, but everybody else was, you know, female too. Mm. Like the only guy was in the finance department at the time that I was there. Anyway, then I left. I was like, I had my first baby and I just wanted something that was less, like I worked all hours of the night, all hours of the day. Mm. We used to have meetings literally at 3 a.m. in the morning. We would have a meeting scheduled for 3 p.m. and our boss would just never turn up and it'd be like, oh, just wait there. Oh, just eat your dinner. Oh, he's coming soon. 11 o'clock would come, we should go home. And now I look back and I go, oh my God, like, why did I not just be like, I'm going home, you know, it's like, it's time to go home. And
are you not exaggerating? Like you actually had a meeting at 3 a.m.?
No, I'm not exaggerating at all. 1, 2, 3 a.m. and he would finally turn up and we would all be like, oh, thank God he's here. It's so great. Like we finally found time for us.
Was
I mean,
this,
it was insane.
This was towards the end, wasn't it?
When this was towards the end, yeah. And this was like, and this was when I was pregnant and when I was just like, I thought I was going to go back, you know, and then when I had my first baby, I was like, I can't go back. I was dreading going back in terms of like, when am I ever even going to see this baby? You know, so I left anyway and I got another job. Vince Camuto, stayed there for a year.
And how long did you have off then? Because I know maternity leave in the US is really short.
I had 3 months.
You had 3 months.
Yeah,
so it's
3 months.
Still
that
really
time.
Short. Like,
yeah, 3 months that time. I have 4 kids. I had 3 months.
She really does.
Yeah, I do. I had 3 months, 3 months, 2 months, 3 months. So that was...
So 2 months?
Yeah.
That was on chance?
That was... Because you're not entitled to any maternity leave if you're not in a company for a year. So twice I moved when I was pregnant. So my second child I had in Dallas when I moved down there to Fossil. And I had negotiated up front, you know, to have... the 3 months off and they were like totally fine with
that. Oh, you started that job just after you had him, didn't you?
No, I started when I was pregnant.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry,
I was 4 months, 5 months pregnant.
Okay.
And So I negotiated that with them and they were like, that's fine. And then then I moved again when I was pregnant with my third son. And
pregnancy is obviously a great time of change for you.
Yeah, I know, right? I think I get bored. I'm like, God, I'm pregnant. God, nothing much is going on. I'm about to have a baby. Like, what else could I do?
I'm pregnant. There's nothing stressful happening in my life. Why don't I change jobs and move states?
Every single child I've had, except for the last one, I've moved house and changed jobs.
Yeah,
during that pregnancy.
Yeah. So, like an absolute...
And move states. You're right. And move states.
Yeah. I'm trying not to use ableist language when I give out about people making decisions that seem strange to me. Because I was going to say like an absolute insane person.
Oh.
But then that's ableist of me. I mean...
Each to their own.
All's well that... I was going to say all's well that ends well, but you're not dead yet.
Well, thanks. And then I moved here when I was pregnant with my third child. Yeah, but I was working after 10 days. I remember.
Didn't your team come over for a meeting?
My team came over. Mom and dad were here.
Our parents were here. And I remember mom calling me and going, your sister's mad. There are people over having a meeting. And it was literally within 2 weeks of having
your baby. Yeah, it was 10 days. The baby was 10 days old and they were all over in my sitting room meeting with me and going through colours and prints and bags, et cetera, et cetera. And,
did they bring you anything delicious? They fucking better have.
To know. I mean, it didn't matter. It's like they're all very nice, you know, it's fine. And then with my fourth child, my fourth and last child, I'd like to point out, it was the same, you know, after 10 days, everybody was over here working and stuff. But I'm happy to work here. Like, I preferred having the 3 months off, obviously, but it was fine. You know what I mean? I preferred them to come over and work with me here than me to have to go back after the 9 weeks. Because I really did find the 9 weeks was really hard. I have to say, it was really hard.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine, like, I have friends who are super senior and very, you know, talented and capable, but they just don't really have a lot of choice. Like, I have friends who've gone back to work after 6 weeks because it's just not been a choice for them. They are the breadwinners. If you don't, it's kind of strange here as well. Like, you get up to 3 months off. The first week is the first 10 days or whatever while your benefits kick in are unpaid. The next 5 weeks are paid up to like a very small percentage of your salary. And after that, you pay for it. Like, you're unpaid. So it's really, it's not something that everybody has the luxury of being able to do, you know?
Yeah, the means to do. And I mean, obviously it's like, I can only imagine, like, from seeing you, I mean, I think I was with you very soon after Nash was born.
That's my first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's now 8. But I haven't been here to see you, like, in the immediate aftermath of any of the other three. Well, but I have seen my friends. Well, and I kind of go...
Don't worry, Rosemary. I would just like to put out for my mother... that any time I ever complain or say, you know, I wish I had more time, you chose this. This was your choice.
No, but what I was about to say was, like, you wouldn't be right after 9 weeks. As in, mentally, like, physically, I'd say you're still wrecked. And, like, that's not even, notwithstanding the fact that you're not sleeping because you're up feeding your baby. I mean, even if you had a wet nurse and a nanny, although actually that probably you'd be grand. But
yeah, you'd be grand.
You know what I mean? As in, it's so soon after this huge...
No, it's more like highly emotional thing. You know what I mean? My hair is still actually falling out. Like, my baby's 16 months old. It's like, I literally realised yesterday it's starting to fall out in clumps around the temples again. So it's all highly hormonal. But I think the 3 months, it's fine. You can do it. Everybody does it. The 9 weeks, 6 weeks, I can't imagine. Like, it depends as well. You know, it depends as well on your experience. Like, for me, I was... The last two were good. I was fine. You know, the first two were very difficult, like recoveries and very painful and lots of like traumatic, you know, infections and all this kind of stuff. So like that was really hard to think that after 6 weeks, I would have still been like in pieces.
Yeah.
Very challenged to sit on an office chair for long hours, you know. So, I mean, I really don't know how people do it, because people with cesareans, you get an extra 2 weeks. So people with cesareans go back after 8 weeks. And I think that must be very difficult. And also we have to remember, like, I'm super lucky that Don, who's my husband, stays at home and minds the kids, you know, and has done since Nash was born. Like, so you think the majority of people are back after 6 weeks, both parents are working, like they're dropping their kids in daycare. I mean, when I drop my kids to pre-K, which is like age 4, before they start school, like for 6 months or a year, to kind of get them into kind of the, you know, the baby infants, like, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like there are babies there who are literally 6 weeks old.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and there's a whole room full of these tiny babies. And, you know, I mean, I presume they're all being very well cared for and you hope they are and whatever. That's not the discussion that we're having. Yeah. But, like, that must be so difficult, and to leave your baby in and then to know that you're coming back that evening. But, you know, people have to do these things. Like, it's not always, it's not always a choice. Like, I'm very lucky.
Yeah. And I mean, I was kind of going to say as well, like, people were over in your house having meetings because you have a very senior position. So it's not necessarily that you're like the fashion intern and people are over going, we have to have a meeting with you after 9 weeks.
Yeah. No,
do you know what I mean? So it is a different situation.
Yeah. But I mean, the whole thing is, isn't it, like, you're not, you know what I mean? That's the long-term investment, because it's like, if you take the 5 years out, then you're going back at a disadvantage and you're missing that 5 years of like career growth and income growth and all that. Like, I mean, but I mean,
but not even,
every single person has to decide if that's worth it for them.
Not even career growth and income growth. But I think now, like in this day and age, it's so crucial. No, like, no matter what you work in, really, you really need to keep up, because things are moving so quickly with online and technology, that I think in so many industries, obviously not all, but in so many industries, you take 5 years out and you almost need to retrain.
I don't know.
Or train up. You know what I mean?
I don't think so. I mean, I mean, depends on what you're doing. But like, I feel like most people who are interested enough in their industry would
kind of keep on top of it.
Keeping up to it. And I'm sure you could do a refresher course. And like, your first day back, your first 3 months back are always going to be a nightmare. Like, they're a nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you now, like, they're a nightmare when you go back after 9 weeks.
Yeah.
And like, and you've had people over to your house every week. Like, they are, you're literally like, this is chaos. Am I ever going to get back to normal? You know, truly, like, it's, you know, you're never going to be, you're never, you know, you can't do everything. Like, you can do your best.
That would be a good note to end on, but I have more questions to ask you. That was very nice.
That's fine,
though.
Because I'm pretty sure I'd like to do another, like, I was about to say tinkle into the glass, but that sounds bad.
You mentioned that Don, your husband, stays at home. Was that a difficult decision to come to? And do you ever wish that was you?
Yeah, I totally wish it was me sometimes. And then I hang out with the kids at home and I go, oh Jesus, no thanks. You've had your own experiences with them, right, Wosie?
Wosie. Chance actually had a cameo on my last podcast.
Oh.
I played a few, didn't I? When he was going, I don't love you. After he came in and I booted him out unceremoniously.
No, I do enjoy sending. I enjoy sending him up to your room. And then I also equally feel sorry for him when he bangs on your door and goes, Wosie, Wosie. And I know you're ignoring him. I think that's really bad. And he's so upset.
And he starts crying way too soon. Like today, to be fair, like I'm not 12 years old. I'm not as sprightly as I once was. It takes me a while to get to the door. Today he was bawling by the time I got, and I literally got up the minute he knocked on the door.
Wait, in fairness, he loves you.
He loves me. Wosie, what you doing?
Oh, he's so cute. He is actually so cute. He rather he sit on your knee than mine right now, honestly. He's
and then,
so cute.
And then he made me
especially
play.
Especially since he's having these accidents.
Oh, stop. And then he made me play Lil Nas X Panini 8 times. Oh, I must play that for you after
so
this.
So much taste. Anyway, I would say, I think it was not a difficult decision at the time. In hindsight, we had no idea. Like, in hindsight, I think how easily you make decisions not knowing the impact that they'll have in your life. You know, I definitely would like the opportunity. I mean, it's funny because I was talking to a woman in the office the other day. She's like 55 maybe, and she is also the breadwinner in her house. Now, her husband is he's a retired something, like in the civil service, basically. So he had a very, you know, regular job, good salary, but she would be a big, you know, a significant earner. And we were both talking about, you know, would you ever want to start your own thing? And she said, you know, well, I was always the breadwinner. It wasn't really an option for me, you know, because I didn't do it straight out of college. And then I had 2 kids, and then you find yourself, it's kind of like life takes you down a path, you know. And I think when Don and I made the decision that he would stay home and take care of Nash, we thought we would have a baby or 2 babies. We thought we would be in New York. We thought that this was a short-term decision, and then in a year we would reassess. And because both of our jobs, because Don's a lighting designer and an event designer, so his job was always at nighttime, you know, and then I was doing a lot of travel. And so we realized once we had this baby, we couldn't do both. Yeah, we couldn't both do this. And so I was the higher earner at the time. Not to say that like he couldn't have been eventually, but like at the time that just made more sense, you know. And
what
so
age
he
were
decided
you then?
31.
Yeah.
So he decided to stay home, and I think we truly both thought this was like an 18-month decision, and then he would go back to work, and we'd get a nanny, or like we'd put, you know, Nash in childcare, whatever. And then when we got pregnant with our second baby, so when Nash was like two, and it was always like, oh, not yet, you know, like I'm not ready to go back to work yet. I'll go when he's, you know, when he's X, when he's walking. Oh, and then it's like, I'll go when he's...
when he's potty trained.
Yeah, and then I'll go when he's... and you know, and they're just so young and they're so like, they need you so much. And we didn't have anybody around us. So we didn't have any parents or family or anything that, you know,
Don's family is based in Florida.
And so you're looking, and we were also the first of all of our friends to have kids. So it wasn't even like, oh, we can drop over to so-and-so. So you're like kind of testing this out by yourself, you know. Then we got pregnant when Nash was two and we decided we would leave New York because it was just too hard. We were living in an area where there weren't really any public schools he could go to. We would have had to go to private schools. So we'd be on the subway every morning with him going X and then going somewhere else for our jobs. And at certain points you just go like, I don't really know, working so hard. To your point earlier on, like we're not really seeing my kid. Yeah. Like, what are we working for? You know, we're not seeing each other. We're not seeing we're not seeing our child. So we decided we'd move, and I got a job in Dallas, and we moved to Dallas. And then we were there for 2.5 years, and then we decided we would move, and we got pregnant again. I mean, my mother would be like, listen, these things can't be accidents. And those,
you
they
didn't
weren't.
Get pregnant.
Like, no, we didn't. Yeah, you didn't get pregnant. Didn't you know how pregnant. This happens. I have to tell you, the first time was definitely a shock. The second and third time, not so much. But we also, like, we had two boys and I was determined. I was like, we're definitely going to have a girl. And then we had another boy and we moved her. And at that point, it's like, you've three kids. You know what I mean? Are you really like, and you're also now, you're not in New York anymore. Don's job was very focused on being in a major, you know, urban hub.
A hub, like,
it's like, this is where events happen. This is where lighting happens. Then you're in a smaller town. Like, Dallas was probably still a big thing, but a lot of it is, like you said earlier on, is connections.
Who you know? I was going to say that.
And, it, like, particularly in an industry like that, it's, you know, you get jobs through word of mouth, through the people that
you've
worked
with. You'd
want
to know, like, Sea of Shoes and her mom, basically, in
Precisely,
Texas.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And at that time, she disabled comments, so I couldn't I couldn't get on there to say, give us a job.
She was wise, actually.
She was wise, but she also was odd the way she went about it, you know, because she was so defensive. It's like, disabled comments, like love and light.
This
not
is like
disabled comments. You're all crap.
This is such a random segue to like talk about a fashion blogger that we used to be. I used to be mildly obsessed with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, me too. So then we went to Fort Wayne, and then like in Fort Wayne, it's, you know, it's in Indiana. It's definitely not an urban hub. And also you'll find like a bit like anywhere, you know. The jobs that are so specific, like lighting or entertainment, they're all taken. You know, there's specific people, they're the go-to people in town. And I mean, I think Don could build up the connections if he was so inclined. But now we've four kids, you know, so.
Yeah. And also, like, would he want to?
Well, I mean, I think he would.
I don't
he,
mean
I think
him,
he would
Don,
like
but I mean, like, would anybody want to? Like, you move to a new city, you're working in somewhere like that.
No, I think Don is.
Would you have to start at the bottom is kind of what I mean. Like that would be hard.
I don't think so, because I think coming from such a big city, you'd probably be a bigger fish. But I also think that he's focused on different things now. You know what I mean? It's not as intriguing going back to your point to something that you're 5 years out of the game or 6 years out of the game. Because he freelanced for a while at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But to go back, and now he's more focused on like, how can I make music? How can I do, you know, these other things that he's passionate about? So it's kind of interesting. Like, you're not going back to the beginning, but you're maybe having to relearn some things. You're having to establish all these relationships, I think, is the hardest part. You're having to kind of find your footing. To go back to your point, to me, it's more that if somebody had said to me 8 years ago, like, or 7 years ago, hey, Don's going to stay home, I was like, great. If they said it to me now, hey, would you go back and do it again the same way? I'm not sure I would, because the pressure to be the main breadwinner, I feel, is so significant. Like, all my options are... And like this, I don't mean this to sound in any way ungrateful, but like sometimes I think I'd love to start a company. I'd love to do this. You can't do that on one income because you can't risk those things. You have kids that you have to take care of. And particularly in America, that you figure out how you're going to pay for their college education, although luckily they can maybe go in Ireland. But the point is, like, it's really difficult to think about. It's all on you now. Like, not in a, like, Don does so much. I mean, I'm not undermining that. You know what I'm trying to say, though, right?
Yeah.
It's more that the financial income is...
No, of course. I mean...
It's like, coming through you. And
all,
I think...
All of your choices have to be made with the knowledge that your income provides for your family.
But like most, you know, obviously most... This has been the male dilemma, obviously, for...
Of course, yeah.
You know, generations. And I don't... But I don't think it was really a problem in the same way. Although, I mean, obviously for people who want to start their own companies or do their own thing, it's that moment of risk. How do you take that risk? How do you How do you sort of reconcile that with the responsibilities that have? Like, it cuts off opportunities that you could have otherwise, you know?
Yeah.
You could, if you 100%. Had, like, if there were two of you working, you could be like, you know what? I'll support you for a couple of years. I'll support this. Like, if you want to do something, if you want to go and do an MBA, if you want to do whatever, you know?
You know what? I mean, obviously, like, having children is great, right? Yeah. Having a partner is great. Mm-hmm. Having your own home is great. But all of those things, the fewer of those things you have, the freer you are to make big decisions like that. And I don't mean that in a it's better, but I suppose I mean...
But it's freeing, right? Because, afternoon...
Thinking about myself, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of going, I'm trying to kind of get a visa to come to America for a year, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years. The only reason that I could consider that when you suggested it to me in May is because I currently do not have a partner. Poor me. I do not have a partner. Mm-hmm. I don't have any kids. And I don't have a mortgage.
Yeah.
And all of these things that I would have been... Like, if you told me 10 years ago at the age of 34, you will be single, you will not have your own home, and you will not have any children. Well, children I didn't think I wanted, so fine. But the other two, I would have been really shocked and be like, no, I'm definitely going to have those. Mm-hmm. But actually, as it happens, if I had those, I wouldn't have felt free to do this. Do you know what I mean? So, like,
You might if your partner was... able to support you, you know what I mean, was willing and able to
the dream.
You might be but like, it's funny because this evening before I put Nash to bed, he started like complaining because his friend is going away in their camper this weekend, and he's like, oh, I need a camper. I said, like, honestly, we don't need anything else that we own. I was like, we'll rent it. If it breaks down, we'll send it back. Like, what'll we do if we crash it? I was like, we'll
claim on
use
the insurance.
Our insurance. And like, but you know, there's a lot to be said for this rental economy. Like, Gen Z and the millennials.
I'd also like to point out, as somebody who went on holidays with their parents in their camper, it's kind of shit.
No, it's an RV, Rosemary. You're in America. It's basically like a hotel room. It expands. You park and it expands.
Ours was one of these like Volkswagen vans that our dad, I was going to say Jimmy, didn't you? But like that our dad jazzed up so that it had
you
a raised.
You didn't think it was shit. She thought it was amazing.
I mean, I thought
Mom
the camper
and dad
itself,
were up above and you were down below.
No, I was up above with Claire.
Oh, so
me and Claire
cute.
Were cuddling up above in the roof. But it's weird sleeping in the same, like, 2 square meters as your parents. There's no doors or anything.
I don't know. We did it all the time in New York, me and Don and Mom and Dad, because our apartment had no doors.
We were
on the platform bed in the kind of, like, alcove room. And they were out in the sitting room. And I remember we used to wake up in the morning and they'd be laughing and chuckling and chatting. And Don, who I think is not used to this model of like family behavior because his parents broke up when he was about 11, he used to be like, I don't understand. What are they talking about? And I'd be like, I don't know. They're like
who
chatting.
The fuck knows?
And they'd be chatting and chuckling, you know, and laughing. They love each other.
You know, I woke up one morning when I was still living at home in our house in Kildare. I woke up one morning and I heard this like hysterical laughter from two of them in the kitchen, right? And I walked into the kitchen, and basically what had happened was Mom had hard-boiled eggs the night before and she'd put them in a bowl and had forgotten which bowl had the hard-boiled eggs and which bowl had the raw eggs. And Dad had taken out his engineer's brain the next morning and gone, you know, Claire, when eggs are hard-boiled, if you spin them, they spin on their side
even,
or on their axis or something, right?
What is going to happen?
Right. So Mom's like, I think she just got annoyed with Dad being like, I'll tell you how you can tell, Claire. And she went, oh, do they? And she picked up a hard-boiled egg and like mashed it into the counter. And they went, it's not spinning, Philip, because she cracked it on the side, right? And Dad went, for God's sake, try again. And he handed her another hard-boiled egg. And she did the exact same thing, right? Where she like whacked it down on the counter and was like, it's not spinning, Philip. And then he said, oh, try it again and stop being so heavy-handed. And he handed her a raw egg.
Deliberately?
Yes. And she mashed it down the counter and it went everywhere. And the two of them, I woke up and the two of them were like covered in egg and laughing their heads off. They were literally having the best morning of their lives with this like hilarity.
Covered in albumin.
It's just goes to show where we get our simple senses of humor from.
Speak for yourself.
Speak for yourself.
Yell yolk.
That's enough now.
All white, I'll stop.
Oh my God. I'm like, now comes the moment where I'm like desperately trying to think of an egg pun and I can't think of anything. I'm just ovum this conversation already.
That's good. Thanks.
Listen. Listen. Liam's head will be scrambled now trying to edit this.
Jesus.
I think you really don't need to pour another glass of that wine.
Oh, God, that was good.
Beatrice, it's been wonderful talking to you tonight for my podcast.
I don't know that we've said anything intelligent.
No, listen, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
If you laugh, the world laughs with you. Oh. Do you want people to follow you on your Instagram?
Well, now that you've poached the subject, maybe.
No. Do you know what your Instagram handle is?
No.
Don't follow her, just follow me.
What is
Rosemary
my Instagram
McCabe
handle?
With an A on my Mac. Oh. Yours is Beatrice McCabe with an A on your Mac.
Oh, good one. Thanks.
I'm suddenly thinking, like, we should have done something like Maxi McCabe, Mini McCabe.
Oh, that would have been really good. I'd be Mini.
No, you're... Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, we never got as far as any of the wise sayings or the sagacity that you were... the sagesse that you were looking for from me. Like, was there anything intelligent?
I don't think I at any point was looking for sagesse from you.
Good, because there's none to be had.
That would not be high on my list. Thank you all for listening to this very long and rambling episode of How to Be Sad. If you manage to differentiate between our voices, then you've done better than Beatrice's children can do.
Exactly.
Because
well
in
done.
The mornings when you wake up and say good morning, they go, who's that? Is it Mom or is it Rosemary?
Mm-hmm.
They really, really love us. If you would like to follow me, you can do so across all social media, Rosemary McKay with an A on my Mac. If you'd like to sign up to my Patreon, then you clearly have great taste, patreon.com/Rosemary McCabe. And the producer of How to Be Sound is Liam Geraghty. Liam Geraghty, podcaster and puppeteer extraordinaire. You can listen to his own podcast at meetyourmaker.ie. And he's great. You should look at his website.
Infinitely patient.
The infinitely patient, Liam Geraghty. Thank you all very much for listening and I'll catch you next time. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.